Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. Tonight we have a very special guest. It is Colonel Gregory Jones. He is currently the Weapons Training Battalion Quantico's commanding officer. He is also the team captain of the Marine Corps shooting team, as we call it. And he's just got a wide breadth of information and knowledge, and he's just going to kind of carry us through marksmanship through the Marine Corps, including the sniper program stuff that's going on. And just Colonel Jones, if you could take the time, can you let everybody know about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Matt and Frank. I like doing these. I've done a couple of these with Gunner, but certainly I think it's important to talk to folks about marksmanship. I talk to every TBS company and give them their high shooter awards. And I just remind them that the slogan, every Marine's a rifleman, is only propaganda if we allow it to be. And I've, throughout my career, I've probably done better at ensuring that in certain regards and not as good in other regards. But it's important to talk about it because it's about lethality. It's about winning the nation's battles. You wanted me to talk a little bit about myself?
Yeah, just a quick bio introduction.
Okay. Too easy. Just, I mean, as it relates to marksmanship, infantry officer, I think that's the most important thing. Had a couple of tours at training command. I think as it relates to the marksmanship discussion, three tours to Iraq with 1-7, one tour to Iraq with Task Force Southwest / 8th Marines. Couple of battalion commands, most notably, again, to this discussion with CO of ITB East. So if we talk in a marksmanship discussion, like, I appreciate the fact that Weapons Training Battalion and the service is starting to look at service marksmanship and infantry marksmanship, because we've done some changes to CMP tables that were beneficial, like reduced the requirement because it was beneficial to the service, but I think not beneficial to the infantry. And so as we mature our thoughts on marksmanship, we modernize marksmanship, some of those experiences that I've had and others have had are important, because every Marine is a rifleman, MCT, TBS. I believe in that, but every Marine's not an infantry rifleman. And there's a difference, and it's a difference that is important, but it doesn't mean that non-infantry Marines have less of a service or lesser in importance in the Marine Corps, especially not as we go into force design and we're looking at killing enemy ships. That's not going to be done by 556 through 308-762. So I think, I mean, unless you got anything else, I think that's probably good for just an opening and sort of some bona fides on being around guns and marksmanship for a while.
So I think we do have a little overlap. You were in ITB, I think, whenever I was over at MCT. You were there, what, around 13-14 time frame?
Yeah, I had 14-16 with Colonel Connor, Jeff Connor, and Colonel Steve Wolf were the COs.
Okay, yeah, I had left there mid-14. So okay. A little overlap.
Yeah, we did.
Sir, thanks again for joining us. But you've served across a wide swath of units, and you've been around and you've seen the Marine Corps change so much in terms of service weapons, technology, optics. What service weapon is like your go-to? Something that you'd probably get a version on your own if you could. And then we'll go with another selection for what's your personal favorite weapon. And we're okay with honorable mentions for this one.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so as we talk about marksmanship modernization, we talk about this a lot, right? So the ARQ done by, you know, that transition, certainly supported by the service, lots of gunners and marksmanship aficionados help with that. Don't want to steal it all for Weapons Training Battalion. But the Weapons Training Battalion did do a lot of that transition. And what we sort of joke about now and talk about in relation to what's in the future for marksmanship modernization, that rifle range, and again, my history might not be exactly correct, so bear with me, but that rifle range was developed in 1907. And I think the service rifle at the time was probably the 1903 Springfield, a bolt gun with iron sights, right? And so my predecessors that were pushing the ARQ through to really end up being the first significant change in service rifle qualification in 100 years, over 100 years, dealt with a lot of naysayers, right? And certainly we should be confused. We should be concerned because it is a big deal. But like, we're also not, we're not thinking, like sometimes our own propaganda can get in its way. We're looking at scores where we have 60% of the service prior to the change at like over 60% as expert. And I think the average score right now, talking to my buddy Mike Arnone, Colonel Mike Arnone, who's the CO Weapons Field Training Battalion, Paris Island, their average is like a 315 on table one. So, I mean, it's right. But why is that? Is it because like our PMIs are better than ever? Maybe, or maybe it's because we got an M16A4 with a 4-power variable scope called the RCO on top of it, right? And it's a, so the test is bad, and the test is old and outdated. I won't say bad. And now we have a better test. So as that leads into like, what is my go-to for service rifle? I mean, my gosh, the IAR, the SCO, along with the PVS 31 Bravos. I mean, that's my time in the service. That's the most awesome weapons and optics suite that we've had ever. I mean, the IR is an H&K platform, a floated barrel. I mean, you just can't compete with that. I showed up and we had the M16A2. I mean, I remember having a fixed carrying handle on the optic and pulling the Ranger handbook as a good source document as a platoon commander. And you know how we would do like night vision? Is you tape up a chem light and duct tape, you tape it in the carrying handle, and then you cut a rectangular swath down the chem light that would with through the peep sight, right? So you flip up the peep sight and you can better see the peep sight and the front sight post, right? And then with mount, you do a C clamp and your finger points down the barrel and you just point your finger in the corner at the target and pull the trigger, because we didn't have lasers, right? And we started, and that was a really rapid change throughout my first, my time as a platoon commander, to go from like 1980s into the 2000s, right? And I mean, I wasn't a lieutenant for that long, but go from 1980s technology into 20th or 21st century, whatever it is, technology. So I would go to, I mean, really the service, especially for the infantry, has just done an outstanding job, I think, and buying high quality weapons and optics. What else did you want me to talk about?
Personal weapon, just something you shoot on your own time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I probably, like a lot of Marines, right? You know, you're comfortable, you're familiar with ergonomics and buttonology of the AR platforms. So I've got an AR-15, my hunting rifle is an AR-10. And you know, certainly in the AR market, yeah, there's plenty of stuff online that you can soup up. So I've done that. Different types of optics, you know, on my AR-10, my hunting rifle in North Carolina for whitetail deer. I got a precision buttstock on there, and I'll probably work to float the barrel. Did recently get a Sega variant and shotgun, so that's been interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting endeavor to go through an AR platform and move from a rifle to a shotgun, and just figuring that out. So certainly a lot of the Marines on the teams and Staff Sergeant Goking has helped me figure it out how to do that. But that's generally what I shoot from a rifle perspective.
Yeah, great picks all around. So I was reading through your bio, and I tend to pick out, you know, deployments, where you've been geographically. And then I saw that you did some time at the Joint POW MIA Accounting Command. I believe that's a part of DPAA, if I'm not mistaken there. But how did that experience expose you to working with a blended team of civilians and service members? And what did you take from that experience overall?
That was a great experience for me and my family. I just done 3 years as a recruiting station CO. So it's sort of a pain in the butt move, but certainly a wonderful duty station with my parents and kids, or not my parents, they did come to visit, with my wife and children. Just great opportunity for young kids to sort of see the world. But you do deal with all types. I had not dealt with too many GS civilians before, and the staff is mostly run by GS civilians. My boss, I was the XO. My boss was, I had two different ones, Army Lieutenant Colonel FAOs, Southeast Asia FAOs, both great guys, but not necessarily. I literally went 3 tours in a row to Iraq to commend staff to recruiting duty. So I was like knife handing and throat punching dudes. And then you just got to go into that environment and you got to wasaw a little bit. Right. And you got to understand the environment. You got to, cause just knife handing and throat punching doesn't work. And then, oh, by the way, we're in that country as communist Vietnamese government's guests, and they are helping us find our missing in action, because we've asked them to, right? So you just have to be. It was very interesting, sort of from a counterinsurgency environment in Iraq, where we just made a lot of people do things, sometimes at gunpoint, to be in a different environment where you just didn't have control. You had money, right? I mean, you had DOD money, and there was rules that we had to basically pay for work in excavation, all done legally, etc. But you don't necessarily have the power. So it was just a good experience, I think, to round out a lot of operational experience and just sort of understand really how to deal with people better. And I think it made me a better leader, right? Because I mean, everyone's had a boss that all they do is knife hand and throat punch, and that's just not fun. It's just not fun. It's not. I mean, that can be toxic. So it just made me a better leader, made me a better, well-rounded leader in person, I think.
Yeah, very cool. The reason it popped out to me is right now they're soliciting people with masters in history to go work for the DPAA.
Oh, really? And,
a lot of candidates, I think from my cohort over at Georgetown, are considering it. Okay. I told them, like, look, you get to, if you're single and you have no attachments, living in Hawaii is pretty neat. A lot of travel there. And it's also a pretty interesting mission too, as you described.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, on that point, I read all kinds of stuff about Vietnamese history, the war, not just the American war, as they call it, but the history of Vietnam as a people. If you go into Guns, Germs, and Steel by Lou Diamond, it's a Pulitzer Prize winning book. And it talks about how Southeast Asia was peopled by really Chinese that walks down there. It was just fascinating experience. And then all the way to, like, I've been to Hue, I've been to Da Nang. I mean, I've been to China Beach, the Marine Airfield, Marble Mountain. You can still see some of the revetments and walls there. I've been to Khe Sanh. I've been in the Mekong River Delta. I remember excavating. Well, I didn't do it. I negotiated and helped facilitate the teams excavating. It's all about history. I remember starting to excavate a site. I think it was the F-105 crash. And they excavate like the berm first, and they found some dentures. And I hadn't done this very long, but the GS civilians are like, bam, that's our guy. I'm like, how do you know that? Like, sir, shrimp farms in the Mekong Delta, Vietnamese don't have dentures, right? That's a first world thing, not a third world thing. We'll go back to DPAA, then JPAC, and we'll get the dental records to get it out to the forensic anthropologist, just so they know that they're onto something. And sure enough, you know, we asked for the dental records, and the pilot had dentures. So it's definitely a neat. It's a long mission, right? That was one example of sort of getting on the gold, air quotes, early. But it usually doesn't happen like that. It's usually, from my experience, bone particles and. Sometimes it turns out to be animal bones. A lot of times it turns out to be animal bones. But it's definitely a neat mission. And then every once in a while, not too often, but every once in a while, we'd run across family members, and that was certainly impactful. But it's a mission that just everyone. I never knew anyone that left Joint Field Activity or JFA excavating for an MIA that had a bad time or didn't feel that it was a rewarding experience.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear about, especially since I don't think it gets a whole lot of visibility. So thanks for providing that context.
Yeah.
But moving back to marksmanship, we're providing our riflemen right now with a lot of cool new equipment, right? They're getting high-cut helmets. They're getting suppressors. Possibly we're getting red dots on pistols. I know that SIG is moving that direction. And a lot of that stuff gets tested within AMTP, which is a new program. We interviewed Dan Rhodes about it, and they're continuing to do great things. But how do you see AMTP's role as they like cement themselves as a part of this testing cycle and as a marksmanship group in terms of testing, advising new equipment implementation in the larger Marine Corps?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I'll just sort of separate out like courses from the battalion's mission. So the battalion, Webster Battalion, we are the service proponent for small arms, marksmanship, rifle and pistol, right? And so every year we really run like an ops advisory group, and Marine Corps listeners will probably know what that means because different communities have those. On the ground side, we go back and forth between different forms of advocacy, but there'd be like the infantry ops advisory group, the regimental commanders sit in, the AOG for artillery guys, and they sort of funnel up to the ground board with the division commanders and DCP P&O. And that's actually the venue through which we bought back scouts and precision marksmen once through the first iteration of infantry battalion experimentation that I think is good, especially when we initially really, really got rid of scouts, snipers, and there was no replacement. So just use that as a frame of reference for the battalion runs its ops advisory group. We do a CMS Combat Marksmanship Symposium once a year. And that's really the venue through which where we figure out what the priorities are for the next year. And that's where the combat-based lethality assessment, which is a gap analysis that the TECOM asked CD&I to do about 2018. And that was the gap analysis that led us to a lot of modernization and experimentation. AMTP, or the Advanced Marksmanship Training Package, is an output of that gap analysis, and it looks at different types of shooting that we need to do, in this case for the infantry, and it matches, I think, a needed, again, we talked about like my go-to service rifle, the IAR, the squad common optic, and the PVS 31 Bravos. That's a different weapon. That optic has more capability in it than my gunner's sniper scope in 2004 in Ramadi, right? That you have to train differently to that, right? It's an 8 power variable optic, first focal plane. I didn't even know what some of that was until I got to weapons training battalion. But if you're an 0311 or an 0302 or an 0369 and you don't know what we're talking about, you need to. And AMTP is the vehicle to make sure that folks are as lethal as possible with the kit that the commandant got, right? So we're in charge of small arms marksmanship, or the proponent for small arms marksmanship for the service. About 2 years ago, we started breaking off infantry marksmanship and service marksmanship. AMTP is the effort to modernize infantry marksmanship. The battalion does do a lot of things with SISCOM, and it can be under an infantry marksmanship or service marksmanship umbrella. M110 SAS testing, we're testing a 6.5 Creedmoor upper. That's right. For SISCOM, those are things that would fall under infantry marksmanship. We've done some red dot testing. That could be service marksmanship. I mean, the infantry is not the only one that uses the M18 that can accept a red dot. MPs could use that. So that's, I think, the difference between the two. And the rest of your question was about technology, excited in terms of contribution to Marine Lethality.
Yeah, I mean, you're at the edge of a lot of it. So, I mean, there's a lot of cool new toys coming out.
Yeah.
What has you excited?
Shoot. Honestly, I'm super excited about drones. I'm not going to lie. Everything, robots, flying robots, driving robots. I mean, manned, unmanned teaming is huge. When I got the privilege to be the OPSO in Task Force Southwest in 2018, and we ran a kill chain, and we got to integrate all types of joint kill chain. We integrated drones from the Army, the Air Force, Army attack helicopters, Air Force CAS platforms, and then with Second MARDIV had the privilege working with now Lieutenant General Donovan and a lot of folks on infantry battalion experimentation with Victor 1-2. There's just a boatload of capabilities out there that would certainly enhance lethality. But modernization of marksmanship is still important, still key, because no one ever said, or I've never read in any force design document, that lethality, small arms lethality, is not key. I've never heard that. I've never heard the infantry is going away. There's still a requirement to seize and hold key maritime terrain, right? Locate, close with, and destroy the enemy by fire in close combat. And small arms marksmanship and high-end small arms marksmanship is still going to allow the infantry Marine or in the every Marine rifleman concept, allow them to close the last 100 yards or defend themselves in the last 100 yards. There's some really good stuff the Commandant has purchased from an infantry weapons kit perspective, but I'm most excited about a lot of different communications pathways that allows us to integrate intelligence and do some kill chain, kill web stuff with flying robots is pretty neat, and I think game changing.
Yeah, that's well said. I think any of us who grew up with RC cars are automatically enamored with drones.
It's like on one of my last overseas tours, it's like, you know, I was able to utilize UAS technology to talk aircraft onto target and to blow up and kill enemy combatants. And all the corrections were used with UAS technology. And it's something that really hadn't been done up until that point. And it was just like, I wasn't trained in it. I just went out and did it, and it works. And, you know, if you look at the numbers, it was successful, and it prevents unnecessary casualties on the battlefield. You can get a close-up picture of what you're seeing, identify the threats that you need to identify, and then just drop bombs on targets. And it was as simple as that.
Yep. My four combat deployments, I killed what? Not me necessarily, it's sort of a team when you're running a kill chain, but we killed more people with aviation ordnance than I've ever heard anybody else kill. With not ever, but like I'm talking coin times.
Yes.
Small arms and mortars and artillery. There's lots of reasons for that. The issue though is, and I think one thing that we have to caution ourselves though, is we had in both Iraq and Afghanistan, we had air supremacy. Full stop. Like no one was shooting down a drone. Like what? We weren't even that nervous about getting mortared or artillery fired against us. And this is going to be different, but because it's different, like, and there may be times when you don't have a cast stack in drones, or you may have some group 1 to 3 drones you're flying locally. But you might be alone and unafraid in force design like that. That brings us back to, you better be good with your service rifle and pistol, regardless of MOS. Cause I think, you know, if you push out, an aviation command and control deck to extend the command and control capabilities of the MAW commander, right, with F-35s, like that, are you going to send an infantry company with sort of a DASC size element? I don't know. I would think we wouldn't want to do that. We want to have those Marine aircraft control folks like actually be pretty good with service rifle and or pistol and be able to defend themselves. Because if you dump an infantry company on them, you just increase your logistics problem, right? Because you got more, literally, as we say, you got more eaters and shitters, right? And it just compounds the problem. So, and again, being that this battalion's neat because we got a lieutenant for MASS 2 that's a summer shooter, right?
And as Alex describes him, he is the next Chris Scott. The dude is awesome.
Yeah, and MASS 2, because they had a bunch of good folks. They took the rifle and pistol team matches in Mi'kmaq Far East, right? So it's not, again, I'm partial to the infantry, and I'm glad that we're breaking out infantry and service marksmanship, but like both need, rising tide lifts all ships. We need to modernize all, and you know, I like, sorry to the guys that are like history, but like I'm not really sure why we're doing the sitting position or the standing position anymore. And if you're not introducing folks to some type of barricade shooting, right? Which is cover and cover, right? Or cover and concealment. Then I just think that it's disingenuous. It's old, and we're holding on to history because we're comfortable with history because we because us old guys know. Are comfortable with what the range used to what the range is or used to be, and
we're not fighting an unknown distance anymore. You know, this isn't World War One anymore.
Yeah,
it's time to move on.
Yep, well, I agree. Yeah, we're there's trenches, and you probably have trigger lines. I mean, there's some of that's just good tactic stuff. If you have the time to put out trigger lines and know the distance, of course that you will. But if you don't have time to do that. Like, and you have an optic with a reticle pattern in it, you probably should know how to use it.
Well, it's like mount is a perfect example of when you're not going to know the distance, because you could be getting engaged from 300 meters away. You could be getting engaged from 400 meters away. Dudes on rooftops. It's like you just don't know. And you have to make those on the spot decisions of knowing how to engage that enemy.
Yep. And that's what we do at AMTP. We teach folks how to use a mil-dot reticle pattern in the SCO, both on stationary targets at unknown distances and moving targets. And obviously during MCMX, whether you have an RCO or a SCO, we teach you how to do the same thing. So that's we're doing the best we can, especially the technology that the service has given us, to make sure that we have corresponding training plans. Because with iron, that's really hard to do with iron sights, right?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've already kind of touched on it a little bit, but how is Weapons Training Battalion pushing the envelope on quality and innovation in terms of weapons education to include ballistics, optics, and course weapons?
A lot of that's done across the service through MCMX. We don't talk enough about CMC and CMT coaches and trainers course. I mean, that's a service POI that we're in charge of. We're looking to, as we go into CCRB for October, for that, leveraging technology and putting more content online. We got to figure out how that'll be done how that can be amplified or maximized. It, like, I think there's 13 different FMTUs, 21 total, 13 that don't fall under Training and Education Command. Those would fall under Marine Corps Installations Command, but look at how much content can we put online. So then when you do go to the course, you're spending most of your time shooting, learning how to shoot, and learning how to teach other people to shoot. So that's an initiative. Gunnar Costa has a terminal ballistics class that he teaches sniper students. We'll probably carry that on in some form into precision marksman students. I believe he gives that to all the AMTP students, and he's paired with, or the battalion is paired, and he is paired with the FBI ballistics laboratory. He's also visited the Army ballistics laboratory. My names for those might be off, but we do a lot of work with them. So we understand and then can explain to Marines what the round is going to do once it enters a bad guy. I think it's just making sure that folks are professional and understand whether it's ballistics, you know, impacts of weather or impacts on clothing or body armor. And really it's just being scientific about the way we kill people. And my sort of end of my first year in command, I've just been really impressed with the fact that we've got Lance Corporals through colonels, myself, that are just excited about science. I mean, ballistics is the science of marksmanship, right? And to see folks just really interested in that and really excited about it. And even the service, when we get to training precision marksmanship, like wanting to ensure, if we get rid of scout snipers, but wanting to ensure in the arms room concept that we've got an M110 SAS and a Mark 22, that weapon system can be utilized and can be utilized effectively is pretty exciting. And then some of the optics stuff too, just going back to the other thing, we've got a really good relationship, with PMIW at SysCom and PM Traces. And so we're not in charge of writing the requirements at CD&I. We're not in charge of procuring things at SysCom, but we definitely want to be involved in, requirements generation on the left end, and then helping SysCom in acquiring things. So that's not exactly, I think, what you guys meant by the question, how we're educating Marines, but we definitely try to have folks, whether it's teams, AMTP cadre, or marksmanship training company, work with the right folks to optimize things that the service wants to purchase, whether it's simulated marksmanship simulators, robotic targets, red dots, lasers. If the Marine Corps is interested in buying it, I think we get a lot of that. Mark or SysCom understands that, at least for initial end user evals and SME support, to come to the battalion. And that certainly is a selfless sales pitch to any Marines that might be interested in coming to the battalion, because it's those Lance Corporals through really CWO4s, really, you know, sergeants and staff sergeants, that are the ones that are, they're providing the feedback to key decision makers in those organizations to write a requirement or buy a thing. And my job, and really Gunner, my officer's job, is just to keep open lines of communication. So again, roundabout answer to that question, but I think we're doing it from individual level through a class or a course, all the way up to service level, through trying to positively impact, again, what we decide as a requirement, what we purchase.
One of the things I really do find interesting, like, and I've only really experienced this at Weapons Training Battalion, but the amount of, you know, you talk about ballistics, you talk about optics and stuff like that, and I would say it is the only place I've ever been where people nerd out nearly as much as they do whenever it comes to ballistics and whenever it comes to optics, and just really understanding the science and the details behind what everything does. You're not going to find that, honestly, anywhere else in the Marine Corps except Weapons Training Battalion. And it's really cool to see the type of discussions that people will have there.
I agree, especially with the rifle and pistol. I mean, ITB CO there. Mortarmen and machine gunners, especially instructors, they would nerd out on that. But on the service rifle and service pistol, I agree with you. There's nowhere else that I've been experienced that breaks it down into that level of detail and truly nerds out. But again, this is our job. We should do that, and we should be the folks that you know, that we can partner with McWill to do precision marksman ship testing with Victor 2.7 and Victor 3.4 in support of IBEX phase 2, right? Again, it's not me, it's gunners, it's gunnies, it's staff sergeants and sergeants. And so, you know, we like to recruit talent, but then use talent to make or help make service change.
So the next question I would say is kind of emotionally charged, depending on who you talk to. But you know, the Marine Corps has divested the Scout Sniper program. What is the Marine Corps doing to kind of close the gap with long range fires now?
Yeah, good question. It is emotional, and I got to be careful what I post on LinkedIn. As the CO Weapons Training Battalion, as Scout Sniper Association, let me know. But to clarify, the Marine Corps did not get rid of all Scout Snipers, right? We retained Scout Snipers in Reconnaissance Battalion and in MARSOC. Reconnaissance Battalions will have their Scout Snipers trained by the Reconnaissance Training Company at SOI West through the Recon Sniper School, and they'll be given the 0322 MOS. I'm not exactly positive how MARSOC trains their snipers, but we're not getting rid of the sniper program, right? There still will be snipers, and we also got to remember that from what I understand, the way I was brought up, both whether it's an LAR company or battalion, tank battalion, although those are gone, an A battalion or a recon battalion, there should be habitual alignment. I'm talking from my second MARDIV G3 days. There generally should be habitual alignment, even with artillery regiment and artillery battalions, right? Like when I go to ITX or I go to McCree or I go out training, you should have, you know, Alpha Company 2nd Recon probably is with Victor 1-2, right? Or one of their platoons is with Victor 1-2, and that company is paired with 2nd Marines. It doesn't always work out from a GFM perspective, but my point is you're not going to have – you probably are not going to have an infantry battalion that has no snipers, right? You're going to have less, certainly, I think, by number, but you're not going to be without. So what the service is doing to bridge the gap is there's going to be a scout platoon and then precision marksman. And you got to understand, in force design from the infantry perspective, there's an arms room concept. And so each infantry company will, from my understanding, will retain the M110 SAS and the Mark 22. So we partnered with McWill and First MARDIV as supporting effort, but SME support to run a precision marksman course for Victor 2.7. We should do it again for Victor 3.4. And then we're working with training commander, higher headquarters, who's been directed by TECOM, General IAMS, and the service to figure out the training path in conjunction with at the desires of the division commanders and their, you know, gunners and subordinate commanders to create a scout and a precision marksman pipeline. And so that's where we are now. Was probably too early. I mean, like we talked about before the show, I don't want to talk about things that are preceding general officer decision, because it's just not factual. Even if it's stuff that I want, if my boss and his boss haven't blessed off on it, it's not what we're going to do. But we're working hard and we're serious. We're serious about retaining lethality. The biggest thing that, to your point, Matt, when you talk about people being emotional, I do get frustrated because I care about Marines. I care about lethality Marines. The only thing I had an Air Force scholarship in college. I don't have to be here, right? I'm here because I love the Marine Corps and I love the infantry, and I'm not, and everyone else I know is not trying to make Marines weaker, right? We're not trying to make us wimps, and right, we weren't wimps before we had snipers, and we won't be wimps afterwards. Just same thing as tanks, right? We weren't wimps because we didn't have tanks. We're not going to be wimps because we don't have tanks. We'll figure it out. We'll adapt and overcome. And the Marines Weapons Training Battalion, to, you know, guys like Staff Sergeant Legant and Gunny Solowinski and Gunny Bazone, they're snipers, and they're dedicated, whether they like it or not, they're dedicated to making sure that precision marksman POI is as capable as possible, and makes that Lance Corporal or Corporal as deadly and lethal as he can be.
No, I appreciate that. It does clarify a lot of things, and you know, things happen. You gotta, we will figure it out. The Marine Corps will figure it out.
Yep, and I get gotta, just like I saw done at 2nd MARDIV, you know, we did a deactivation ceremony for tanks, 2nd tanks, for 8th Marines 3-8. I've already talked to my CG. We'll do something. I don't know when we're going to do it, but we'll do something for SSIS. I mean, there's been a lot of, I mean, that place tracks its history back to Carlos Hathcock. I mean, there's a lot of Marines in the service and aren't in the service that came through that schoolhouse. Obviously a lot of combat veterans from multiple wars came to that schoolhouse. So we'll do what is right, and honor the legacy of those Marines. But you know, it doesn't stop. I think there's a quote out there somewhere, I'm gonna mess it up, but Napoleon said something like, you know, soldiers come and go, but the regiment never dies. That's probably like really only 30% of the quote. But I mean, the Corps lives on. The regiments live on, and we'll I'm not worried about us not being as good as our predecessors.
So, you know, historically the military has led the edge, or has had the edge on marksmanship, and there has been a big boom in competition. We're now at a point where we send our Marines to civilian competitions and training to bring concepts back to the fleet. Do you think that is going to continue? And how do you see the military training affecting the larger civilian market to include the Second Amendment space?
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly, when I showed up, I knew some things about the battalion. I didn't know other things. I think the Webster Training Battalion was one of my top picks for supporting establishment 06 commands. I did not know a whole lot about the Marine Corps shooting team. And I asked people, like, what's the Marine Corps shooting team about? And they were like, well, it's recruiting. Well, I was a CEO of RS Cleveland, and guess where Perry, Ohio is? It's like right northwest of Cleveland. And so with a bunch of Clevelanders, and my RS Opso, I think, was a Marine J. Rotzi guy, and he was like, we should go to Perry. And I went there when I was in high school, and it'll be great. My recruiter instructor was like, no. It's like, why not? That sounds great. He's like, everyone there is either already going to get in the military vis-a-vis like RXO, or they're already in the military and we're not going there because we're not going to write any contracts.
Or they're old and they're going to die.
Yeah. So I'm going to go this year. I haven't been yet, obviously. So we never went there. And I never saw the Marine Corps shooting team. They never asked to help me out. And that's because it's not their job, right? The mission of the Competition in Arms program for which the teams run is to, this is a paraphrase, but it's to increase the lethality of the total force. I.e., me and Sergeant Major went to MCMC Far East, ran into an F-35 pilot, or excuse me, not pilot, airframe mechanic from the Green Knights. Guess when the last time he went to the rifle range was? This is a staff sergeant.
Probably whenever he was a corporal.
Something like that. It was 7 years ago, and he heard about MCMCs, and he called a Sergeant Major, who's a ground guy. As the story goes, the staff sergeant told me, and I gave him a coin. He gave me a Green Knights patch, and he was like, hey, I want to go do this. I think it'll be great. Sergeant Major's like, absolutely. Right. And he didn't medal, but he had a great time and learned a lot. Right. So it's not going to go away. We're going to continue to do it. We're probably going to tweak what we do. Just for example, like the red dot question. I mean, we have tested red dots with SISCOM, right? Just figure out our dots better than like a laser for night shooting on your rifle. The answer was no. We probably need to invest into better lasers, right? So we're definitely not going to do it. Now that I've asked the teams to look at different types of competition, because I believe that they should bring back best practices from a marksmanship perspective to bring that back into the MCMC. So for example, this year was the first time ever, anyone I talked to that we shot at night, right, at MCMCs, at regional MCMCs. And it's the first time that we shot at moving targets. That's just because General IMs bought moving robotic targets, and we didn't have them before last year, right? And so what do the teams do? They started going to night competitions so they could understand best practices to safe, right, a shooter. And the one thing that I've learned from talking to the guys on the teams, folks that run competitions, especially aggressive competitions like night competitions or three gun competitions, and you know this, Matt or Frank, you guys are competitors. You get very good at running a safe stage because you don't know who Banats is. Banats could be regionally ranked competition shooter, or could be some dude that just won the lottery and bought a bunch of competition guns, right? So they know that their job is, just like the rest of the battalion, is to enhance the lethality of the FMF. And so when they go to competitions, we want them in competitions that are in the action discipline, i.e. look like combat marksmanship. So when they come back and build MCMCs or regional marksmanship competitions, they do what the purpose of the mission is. They enhance the lethality of the total force.
No, well said.
What else do you want me to follow up on that one?
No, I think...
If I could. So both Matt and I participate in the tactical games, and we've been talking a lot about... So if you're talking about two cornerstones of the Marine Corps identity, right? Marksmanship and fitness. But we're starting to see those merge in the competitive sphere. And I'd say that the tactical games has done a pretty good job of doing it. I don't know if they've quite found the right balance. I'd say it's more of like CrossFit athletes who've got into guns than the other way around. But it's something that, Matt competed with Lieutenant Bodziak. They did really well. I think Lieutenant Bodziak is looking to bring Sergeant Garcia with him to this next team. The guys are already competing on their own. But is that an innovation that you possibly see the Marine Corps adopting in terms of merging, like getting an elevated heart rate and really stressing the hell out of your marksman and see if he can make shots under duress?
No, you're absolutely right. And yes, we have. Training Command just ran the fittest instructor games from TCOM. That's on, I think it's on there.
Yeah. I saw the post. Yeah. Page.
We're a subordinate training command. And sure enough, we did we did a marksmanship station. This is a physical sort of this. So it's two ends of the spectrum. This is sort of like the analogy of the CrossFit guys that do some marksmanship. But the neat thing that I saw is they came out to Ironman at Webster Battalion Compound. They ran a mile, and then they shot from a couple of different barricade supported positions. And they're Marines. Every Marine's a rifleman, and it's only propaganda if we allow it to be. I don't know the MOSs of these folks, but they just knew, and it was a lot of different type of people, boys and girls, big people, small people. They're all the commonality was they were Marines and they were in shape. But you could tell that when they went to the station and they got in the prone of the kneeling, they'd got 30 seconds to make a shot or two shots. They attempted to control their breathing first, because at boot camp they get taught the fundamentals of marksmanship, and breath control, if I'm correct, is one of them. So that's one end where we put marksmanship in a physical fitness competition. The other end is like mix, and how competitive, or how combat like is it? And we are working on that now. Range complexes always differ. I did not go to Hawaii this year, but they did some really neat things. Running up stairs to a second, like a second story firing position. They had a trench complex that they could clear here at championships this year. We added in, this is sort of historical context too. This one wasn't really physical fitness, but we added in a World War II stage with M1 Grand in 1911 for historical purposes. But we also added in some multi-gun stages, or, pistol rifle stages, which a lot of even true Marines don't get to do that much, normal Marines. But there was a significant amount of movement and sprinting from one bay at SAT over to the other for that purpose. And again, you'd see the same thing. Like, I'm sprinting to make as much time as I can to be competitive, but before I take the first shot, I really need to stop and slow my heart rate. So we're doing that. And then team rifle, I think it might have been Staff Sergeant Goking or somebody else had him run from yard line to yard line. Yep. So we're actively seeking to do that. The three-gun team does a lot of that, and I'll forget the names of the competitions, but we've asked them to go out and do those competitions to think through stuff. The problem that we always have, and you guys know this, is throughput, right? So we could – the more PT we do, probably the less shooting that we're doing. And I already do get some gruff from folks about not doing any high power at all. I guess the advantage of high power is you could push a lot more people through.
Yes.
Arguably not realistic training. Well, the metrics that I understand is mix, when we did a lot of high power, you could pull about 300 competitors through. And now when we're doing action combat shooting, we're only doing, I think, talking to Captain Williams and Master Sergeant Capco, we cap it at about 168. And we actually, it's a good problem to have. From our perspective, we've had to turn people away. Now, it's a bad problem from their perspective, because their unit let them go shoot and they couldn't. So that's when I talk to older folks that are in the Marine Corps about negatives of combat action shooting, that certainly is one of them. But again, I'd rather have less people shoot something more realistic than more people shoot something that is of a bygone era, I think.
Absolutely agree.
I couldn't agree more. So AMTP and Marine Corps Shooting Team, they do have a symbiotic relationship. And the AMTP is benefiting from legacy members of the Marine Corps Shooting Team, for instance, Cardenas, Rhodes, Hill, Glomba, Germanello, and Chris Scott. And the proficiencies gained from competing at a high level are definitely or directly contributing to marksmanship instruction for the fleet. How do you view the relationship between the Marine Corps Shooting Team and AMTP going forward into the future? You know, will the Marine Corps Shooting Team become kind of a proving grounds and feeder system for AMTP instructors, and blending with promising fleet Marines to provide the best in terms of experience and competitive excellence?
Yeah, so I honestly owe some more thought on this, and this is a topic that comes up a lot. Again, talking to Gunnar Costa the other day, we probably need to have sort of we have an instructor development program. I mean, every formal schoolhouse, formal learning center, training command has one. You have to have one. But that's more on platform instruction. Really what we're talking about here is how do we groom the best marksmen, but not just the best marksmen, those that are really good marksmen, but are also very good at instructing marksmanship. And so we have some, and then codifying that process and certifying whether it's an IOC instructor or a coyote at TTCG, or an EOTG instructor, how do we codify that process to replicate high level instruction? We're working on it right now. It's really Gunnar Costa and Gunny Rhodes that just put on an IMA and watch infantry marksmanship assessment, which is the test for advanced marksmanship training program. Basically run that with members of the battalion, generally from a marksmanship training company in teams, and then sit down and have an interview. But we need to think through formalizing it. But the OIC of the shooting team knows to keep recruiting, because regardless of MOS, the best folks, the best marksmen we do get generally on the AMTP staff comes from the teams. The one thing, though, that and I didn't understand this until I was out shooting with actually Sergeant Cardenas, is they were teaching me, and I shoot, and I've just been here longer, so I've shot more with different folks in the unit. The one, and I wouldn't call it a problem, but the thing that Gunner tells me he's got to talk with his guys about is it needs to be balanced, right? There's some straight up infantry Marines from MTC, young sergeants that are good marksmen. They may not be as good as some of the guys from the teams, but they're certainly current from recently coming from the FMF. There's a difference between tactics and stage planning, right? Mm-hmm. And so when Gunner tells me when he first started doing some of the IMA drills, infantry marksmanship assessment drills, the guys of the teams would, like, if you got to do any shooting and moving, the guys on the teams would sprint forward as fast as they can to a stationary position, closer to the target, then shoot, and they would get a better score, right? But that's not necessarily the best way to tackle that problem tactically. You may want to shoot first, be less accurate, but score a hit, right? Like, if I, you know what I'm saying? If I shoot you in the lung but not the heart, and I do it 3 seconds quicker,
why close the gap without having any covering fire?
Yeah, it's just a different. Well, and you're a competitive shooter, but also an infantry guy, and it's not just infantry guys. It would be MPs or anyone that does any CQB stuff. So there is a balance, because stage planning and execution is different than, in certain ways, than combat marksmanship. There's a lot of similarities, so we just got to make sure that we have a good balance, and we owe more work on what the balance is, and how we template, decide on who instructors are, and codify an instructor training package. But again, we don't even have TNR tasks yet for shooting a moving target in the Marine Corps, and it's the 21st century, or the infantry marksmanship assessment. We've been doing it through both SOIs for a year and at SOIs for 2 years. So, the McRibs aren't even updated. Well, they are about updated, but they're going through first round of draft. So we're doing a lot of stuff at once. But I guess short answer is yes, teams are important, but folks from the fleet are important. And we just got to figure the best ways to blend that together. At the end of the day, though, if you want to come to a unit where, like you said before, Matt, where you wake up every day, eat, sleep, and breathe ballistics and the science of shooting and training marksmanship, then come to Webster and Tank Quantico.
Do you see the role that team does? Because I know a couple of years ago the team started going out and doing mobile training teams. Do you see that continuing on?
I'd love to do it. It's a money issue. So, I mean, they have a schedule that they do need to keep. McMix are, in my mind, a priority. And then obviously their own ability to compete is also important for the reasons we talked about. We could do more, admittedly. I think it is good. I think with 2nd Recon Battalion right now, we generally, I mean, it's at least for the year I've been here, we've done it twice. Every time they've got a company that forms together prior to becoming the Maritime Raid Force and shopping to the MU, we usually go down there and do a shooting package. I'd love to do it. We probably could do it more. The issue is TAD funding, mm-hmm. right? So if units are willing to pay for that, then that's easier for me to do. And you know the deal, because you're on the teams. They shoot, and they would teach people how to shoot. They're not looking to stay in the Grand Hyatt on the strip at Vegas. They'll stay in a barracks room.
I was talking to a captain today. You know, he's a coworker, and you know, he's about to go back to the fleet next year, and he had no idea that the Marine he's heard of the Marine Corps shooting team, and so I kind of gave him a little education, and he was just like, "Oh my God, wow!" He's like, "Hey, I'll be back in the fleet next year. Yeah. I want to see about getting my arty guys like the because he was describing like artillery guys are really good at artillery stuff. Yeah. But whenever you bring it back down to the rifleman concept, he's like, we don't focus enough on that. He's like, I will definitely be seeking that out and getting them out. And I told him, you know, hey, next week, let me bring you over to the teams and introduce you to them. And you know, it's all about visibility and exposure as well.
No, I agree. That's why I do stuff like this. Cause like I said, Weapons Training Battalion was pretty high on my list. I thought I knew a lot about it. And when I got here, I realized I didn't know half as much about it. But on the infantry side too, as it relates to AMTP, we're running AMTP initial slots. Sometimes they're not full. Gunner Costa is going to work to make sure we can, because we don't even have a CID or course identification. It's not even it's on the final legs of being a formal POI. So we don't quite have training and education funding. So, but gunners, we're working to make sure the West Coast, we can fund West Coast units. That's been a primary issue of having more East Coast units than West Coast, because they can just drive up and it's cheaper. We know we need to balance that out, but infantry Marines certainly can come to AMTP initial at the battalion, and then after they've been the initial, come to AMTP train the trainer course. So you then would be certified to run initial courses. So those are things that are available for the infantry Marines. And non-infantry Marines, like you said, probably teams MTT is best. But again, that's if folks can help me fund that, then that becomes easier for us to do.
Now, we really do appreciate you coming on here, sir. I think this conversation was extremely interesting and really, you know, just good knowledge for people to have that they don't normally hear, especially from a higher level.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's exciting. I'd love to come back on when we get some more things done. We got a marksmanship campaign plan that we're working on. Can't talk about it too much now because I'll get in front of general officers. But again, it's the ARQ is great. Modern and AMTP is great, but what about, you know, what about ART? What about CPP? There was reasons, like I mentioned before, the kind of base lethality or assessment, gap analysis. I mean, there's things we need to do. Like we don't have lethality based targets for the CPP yet, right? Table one, are they allowed to shoot with a Magpul magazine on the deck like they are at ARQ and AMTP? And so there's things that we just need to keep working on. So once that some of that stuff gets formalized, I'd be more than willing to come back on just to let folks know what's going on and what's out there.
Frank, you got anything?
No, I just like Matt said, this is a really good conversation. And yeah, if you're willing to come on and talk more after some time's passed, then we're definitely willing to have you.
Yeah, too easy. It's easy and fun for me to talk about great Marines doing awesome things. So thanks for having us, and thanks for both of y'all continuing to be advocates for Webster and Battalion and the shooting teams and AMTP.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they're family. I love it. I miss it. But to our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this. We hope you got a different perspective on, you know, higher level education, Marine Corps, Weapons Training Battalion as a whole, and the Marine Corps shooting team and what's being done at the service level. So if you guys have any interesting questions that you'd like to have for us or for Colonel Jones, let us know, and we'll be sure to get you some answers.